Welcome back. As all the parshiot, all the sections that we read, the portions we read in the book of Genesis and Bereishit, they are filled with a plethora of events. Often each of the events is worthy of discussion, long discussions, and all kinds of interpretations. We're not going to have time for all of that, but I'd like to just tell you what's in the parsha, and then we'll focus on one part. Jacob prepares to meet Esau, and he wrestles with a man who changes Jacob's name to Israel. Then Jacob and Esau meet and part peacefully, each going their separate ways. They have a very difficult portion that is there, an interlude about Dinah, the sister of the 12 sons, who was raped, according, and that's a question there too. Is she raped or seduced by in Shechem by the son of Hamor the Hivite? And Jacob's sons, Shimon and Levi, take revenge by murdering, and this is a very gruesome kind of story, murdering all the males of Shechem after they agree to be circumcised. Thus, in their recovery, they are slain, and Jacob's other sons join them in plundering the city. We then get the story of Rachel dying, giving birth to Benjamin and buried in Ephrata, which is the present-day Bethlehem. And the Parsha ends with Isaac dying and being buried in the double cave in Hebron. And then, and by the way, Jacob and Esau come together for the burial of their father. And then there's extensive lists of both Jacob and Esau's progeny. Quite a bit of space also to Esau, who will also be the progenitor of 12 nations. So there's the idea of balancing both Esau and Jacob and their influence. So I'd like to focus a little bit today on the first story, a very well-known story. And it goes like this: Jacob was left alone. Well, first of all, he hears that Esau is coming towards him to greet him. He had heard that Jacob is coming by Jacob sending gifts and etc. in order to pacify his brother. He hears that Esau is coming towards him with 400 men, and thus he gets very fearful that this might not be a peaceable encounter. And he divides his community, his clan, into two parts, one across the Yabok River and one the other side of it, in case he says one of them will be attacked, the other will survive. And then he says, it says he is left alone. Left alone. Levado. Interesting term. He's left alone. And a man wrestled with him until the break of dawn. And when he saw that he had not prevailed against him, he wrenched Jacob's hip at his socket, so that the socket of his hip was strained as he wrestled with him. And then he said, "Let me go, for dawn is breaking." But he answered, "I will not let you go until you bless me." And said the other, "What is your name?" And he replied, "Jacob." Said he, "Your name shall no longer be Jacob, but Israel. For you have striven with beings divine and human and have prevailed." So this, of course, is a pivotal moment in the life of Jacob, certainly, but also in the tradition that it comes from, that we are the children of Israel. Let me just give a few little things to talk about, and then we can move into our discussion. First of all, one of the great things I learned from a wonderful colleague and friend, Rabbi Larry Kushner, was a way of understanding the story. He says basically what we see here is Jacob encountering a reality. And this reality is that he's fearful, etc. This might be a panic dream, if you will, if you want to understand it that way. But Rabbi Kushner said to me, Larry said to me, he says, "You know, it's about people committing themselves to life. And in committing yourself to life, striving and being, if you will, successful in living your life, and part of it is that you have to make commitments. And living up to commitments is very hard. A lot of people are commitment phobic, as you know, not only in relationships, but also in their relationship to the world around them. And the reason they're commitment phobic is because they have a fear of being hurt. And what we learned from this story he told me, which I thought was very astute, was that when you make a commitment, you have to take the risk of being hurt, of being hurt. You may have to take it. And thus, Jacob is hurt in his challenge, the challenge he has of living his life. And he leaves the world with a limp. He is injured by life in a certain degree. And then he said, a wonderful conclusion to this kind of interpretation is that there is no one who leaves this world without some sort of limp. Each of us have their own limp, which is a sign that we have struggled and that there is a stress or a struggle. Also, we have the name change, and I'll talk about that for a moment and then get to the major thing I want to talk about, which is the overcoming fear. And I think we can talk about that a lot in both the Jewish tradition, Buddhist tradition, all traditions. How do you overcome fear? First of all, the name Yaakov, you should know, comes from the word ekev. He holds on, according to the tradition, to the heel of his brother Esau at birth. He's called the heel. Well, not a great name for a kid, you know what I mean? The heel. And he learns from his mom and his uncle that the way to get through the world is by manipulation, by using the other, manipulating the other. Buber will call this an I-it relationship rather than an I-you relationship. Levi Yitzchak of Berdichev, a great Hasidic teacher, says you should read Yaakov as someone who's manipulative, someone who reaches for his left ear with his right hand, going around rather than reaching it with your left ear. But the name he gets, Yisrael, you can read, if you look at just the letters without any punctuation, you can read it as Yashar El. Becoming straight with God, or becoming having a sense of yosher. Yosher is fairness in the modern Hebrew, yo-yosher. So basically, he goes from being a manipulator who's sort of twisted into becoming somebody who is now straight. Interesting kind of thing. And as I said earlier, as Rabbi Kush said, even in the process of becoming straight, there's a possibility of injury, even that. But he straightens out. He's no longer going to be the manipulator. He had done that with his uncle Lavan, with all kinds of the goats in the previous chapter. And of course, we know about Rebecca and her plan, her plot, her scheme, if you will, that Jacob would get the first blessing. So that's very much arise in there. So he suggests that Yisrael, Rabbi Levi Yitzchak, that you can also read it as Li Rosh. You can take the letters and play with them. And, the rabbis love to take letters and play with them. And that means straight with God. God is in my head, Li Rosh, meaning in the forefront of my consciousness. And he suggests that Yisrael consciousness is connected with God at all times. And Jacob's consciousness, in contrast, is mundane and boundary. And perhaps it arises out of that initial experience of Jacob continually grasping, which began even in the womb. He wants to grasp things, he wants to command them. And of course, what is different about this renaming, we've had a couple of renamings. Avram becomes Avraham, Sarai becomes Sarah, and the previous name is no longer used at all. But this is a little confusing because Jacob remains his name. And we see a fluctuation, if you will, between Yisrael consciousness and Jacob consciousness all through. We start one of the first things you're supposed to say when you go into a shul is Ma tovu oalecha Yaakov mishkanotecha Yisrael, which of course is the blessing of Bilam, the prophet, who says Ma tovu, how goodly are oalecha Yaakov, right? The tents of Jacob, and the dwelling places of Yisrael. And that also tremendous amount of interpretation about that. But remember, Jacob is introduced to us in his early years as a person of the tent. He sits at in the tent. What does that mean? He's not a warrior. He's not a hunter-gatherer. He lives in the tent, and that's where the women are. And that explains his affinity for cooking and making particularly lentil soup, which seems to be his specialty. So just moving along a little bit. Fear, he uses two words for being afraid, and the rabbis play with that as well. Vayira, Yaakov Me'od, this is chapter 32, 8. Vayira, and the word yira, we should remember, is a word for fear. Yaakov Me'od, he was very, very fearful. Vayitzar lo, and it was a tzara for him. It was a tzara from the word meitzar. It was a contracted place for him. Vayichatz et ha'am asher oto, and of course he separates in order to protect himself. So the rabbis ask, what does it mean to have these two words? Why not? It's enough to say he was fearful. Why add Vayetzer lo? And one of the nicer interpretations of this is that he's fearful in two ways. He's fearful in the way of maybe he will be the victim, maybe he will be killed. But the second one is that maybe he will have to kill someone else. Interesting, a beautiful kind of idea. Now, one of the phrases that's repeated in the Torah hundreds of times, 365 times according to one counting, is the phrase "fear not." Fear not. So, in a sense, you have 365. You can say, "I get that admonition every day of my life," because excessive fear can weaken a person, depriving them of their strength and might. And Rabbi Cook, really also a wonderful teacher in the 20th century mystic, explores the detrimental effects of excessive fear on the human spirit. And he says there is a deficiency in fear from its external aspect because it softens the heart too much. It deprives a person of the character of his might. And so, in that respect, he remains like a man without any strength. So, one of the products of fear is being weak or soft. So, we have two words in Hebrew, many words in Hebrew. One of the weird words is yirah, yirah, and that can be translated both as fear. Also, it's the same word for awe, awe. So Rabbi Heschel says, and fear is the anticipation and expectation of evil or pain. Awe, awe, or being, if you will, reverential. That's a word that can be used as well to revere. Also used as a translation. Awe, on the other hand, is a sense of wonder and humility, inspired by the sublime or felt in the presence of mystery. Awe is the acquisition of insights which the world holds in store for us. Awe, unlike fear, does not make us shrink from the awe-inspiring object, but on the contrary, it draws us near to it. And this is why awe is compatible with both love and joy. In a sense, awe is the antithesis of fear. He goes on to say, there is thus only one way to wisdom, awe. He causes in other places, he calls it based on previous teachings, talks, of course, about radical amazement, right? Being amazed by the miraculous, which is in everyday life. So he says there is only one way to wisdom, it's awe. Forfeit your sense of awe and let your conceit diminish your ability to revere. And the universe becomes a marketplace for you. And he goes on and says, a return to reverence is the first prerequisite for a revival of wisdom. Wisdom, he says, comes from awe rather than from shrewdness. And again, Jacob is, that would be a good way to translate it. He's very shrewd, and it's not always a positive word. It is evoked not in moments of calculation. Again, a very good definition, that people who manipulate are calculated. They're always making an assessment of what this will give me. And he then goes on, but in moments of being in rapport with the mystery of reality, the greatest insights happen to us in moments of awe. So wonder, he says, is not a state of aesthetic enjoyment. Endless wonder is the state of being asked the ultimate question. The soul is endowed with a sense of indebtedness. The wonder, awe, and fear unlock the sense of indebtedness. Wonder is the state of our being asked, in spite of our pride, in spite of our inquisitiveness, we are driven by the awareness that something is asked of us. And we are asked to wonder, to revere, to think, and to live in a way that is compatible with the grandeur and mystery of living. This is one of the great and wonderful traits of Rabbi Heschel. He's eminently quotable, and is quoted quite often. So let's talk about a little bit about fear. Fear is a natural thing. No one likes to fear, and yet it's always with us. We fear and we seek relief from fear. The psalm that we read for the month and before Rosh Hashanah and continue to the end of Sukkot is Psalm 27, which basically says, Adonai, my light and my liberation, whom shall I fear? Adonai, stronghold of my life, of whom shall I be afraid? And the psalm goes on to talk about feelings of being assaulted by enemies, adversaries, perhaps external forces, perhaps internal demons, and feeling supported in the face of these challenges. In the psalm, a sense of God's presence is the antidote to fear. It suggests a spiritual practice to overcome fear, finding a sense of refuge within our own hearts, finding sanctuary by sitting in God's house, and seeking a sense of Noam Adonai, godly peacefulness. Rabbi Sacks, and again, for those of you who, I really can recommend to all of you an opportunity to teach us as well. And if you're looking for inspiration, I'll be glad to supply you the various sources that we use, that I use, that really give us a lot of things to think about. And maybe you will not be fearful of presenting and teaching us, because all of us have that capacity. Our tradition believes that the tradition only flourishes if each and every one of us become teachers and not only students. So there were people in the Tanakh who had a kind of fear. Perhaps you may be familiar, of course, with the story of Moses at the burning bush, where he says, who am I? Who am I to do this? Who am I to deliver the word of God? And the prophets, many of them as well, are asking, who am I to stand? And Jacob is sort of asking, who am I to stand before my brother Esau, knowing that I will continue the covenant and he will not, ask Jacob. And sometimes the greatest have the least self-confidence, because they know how immense is the responsibility and how small they feel in relation to it. So courage does not mean, this is Rabbi Jonathan Sacks says it so beautifully. He says, courage does not mean having no fear. It means having fear, but overcoming it. If that is true of physical courage, it is no less true of moral and spiritual courage. And then Rabbi Sacks led me to a quote that I didn't know, from a writer that we don't necessarily talk a lot about. She was actually a presidential candidate at one time, Marianne Williamson, who I believe grew up as Jewish. I don't know if she's a Jew, but she's Jewish. Our deepest fear, she says, is not that we are inadequate. Our deepest fear is that we are powerful beyond measure. It is our light, not our darkness that most frightens us. We ask ourselves, who am I to be brilliant, gorgeous, talented, fabulous? Actually, who are you not to be? You are a child of God. Your playing small does not serve the world. There is nothing enlightened about shrinking so that other people won't feel insecure around you. We are all meant to shine as children do. We were born to make manifest the glory of God that is within us. It is not just in some of us, it's in everyone. And as we let our own light shine, we unconsciously give other people permission to do the same. As we are liberated from our own fear, our presence automatically liberates others. A quote from Shakespeare, Rabbi Sacks says, in the 12th night, be not afraid of greatness. Some are born great, some achieve greatness, and some have greatness thrust upon them. We are all children of the man who is given the name of one who wrestles with God, with men, and prevails. Ours is not an easy task, but what worthwhile mission ever was? We are as great as the challenges we have the courage to undertake. And if at times we feel like running away, we should not feel bad about it. So do the greatest among us. To feel fear is fine. To give way to it is not. For God has faith in us, in all of us. Even the best of us lack faith in ourselves. And I'd like to just conclude. I'm just going to find this. A quote from Harold Kushner, wrote very important books, as you know, particularly Why Bad Things Happen to Good People. And he writes, and I'll conclude with this, fearful people cannot be happy. Fearful people cannot be gracious, charitable, or forgiving. Fear constricts the soul and keeps us from being as fully human as God would like us to be. And thus, going back to Jacob being afraid and also being in a constricted, narrow place, basically this is what he is trying to overcome, his sense of being constricted and finding freedom in what we call the spaciousness, the merchavya. Min ha-meitzah karati lach, out of the depths of narrowness, I call to you, and I am given the opportunity to be b'merchavya, to be in the spaciousness of the spirit of the world. So, have you ever been afraid of anything? Is that something that's in your deeper selves, or even in your, if you will, external selves? Right? How do we operate with fear and not make it crippling? In the Buddhist tradition, there is quite a lot you could do, and that's what we're doing. It's about how you approach the practice, how you try to understand that it may not be an actually really precarious situation. It might be a product of your own storytelling, right? And how you can basically diminish it by basically becoming aware of the fact that all things pass, and even your fearfulness can pass and doesn't have to, if you will, enslave you, right? I think that's a lot about what our practice is all about, as I said when we first started, is how do we liberate our capacities? How do we liberate ourselves from our own sense of fear, constriction, self-doubt, etc.? And how do you create the expansiveness of consciousness that allows us to realize that we are part of a much larger realm? And there are many different ways that exhibits itself to us. We can receive it in different ways. So thank you for your attention. I have much more to say, but one of the things that you should know about me, maybe about Yocheved and Bobby, is we over-prepare. We read a lot of stuff, and we take out a lot of stuff, and sometimes we overdo it. But it's fun. I mean, that's the nice thing about preparing a teaching. That's why I recommend it to all of you. There's a certain real pleasure in delving into something with a little bit of depth. You know, really, it's really invigorating. And of course, you got to watch out for the rabbit holes that all of these teachings bring you, which I will deal with at another time. But even the rabbit holes could be fun. Just got to make sure you don't get too drawn away from what you're looking to do. Okay, folks, how are we doing? Are we don't be afraid to speak. It's okay.